Welcome to 2-Bit Encryption, the officially unofficial podcast for Mr. Robot on USA. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
I said that really fast. We are talking about Season 4, Episode 6, titled Not Acceptable. I got to slow my speech down here a little bit. Take a breath. What do you think of this episode,
Aaron? It's the one where Mr. Chips finally turned to Scarface.
Okay, there were some lines crossed, certainly, yeah.
This is, from the feedback I've gotten, just looking at what people are saying online, it feels like the Elliot kind of crossed a Rubicon here, that he, this was, at the very least, still watching Jane choke to death her own vomit moment, if not a little bit more intentional than that. And it's like, the other thing is, okay. I can't wait till we actually get to the scene in question, because I'm not entirely sure whether it's not meant to be even darker than it already is.
I'm not even sure how it could be, but interested to hear you.
But I really liked this episode. I thought the scene between Elliot and Olivia was dynamite. I thought the scene between Dom and Darlene were dynamite. I thought Vera is a really fascinating, interesting character with a lot of like really good dialogue and just captivating performance, though I know a lot of people disagree. I liked it. So the only thing that I guess negative is I'm getting a little bit antsy that like some big questions that were raised really early in the season don't seem to. I mean, it kind of makes sense because from Elliot's standpoint, what, 16 hours have elapsed since he found out he had a third personality?
Yeah, not very long.
But it's weird in the mini monologues that Mr. Robots has that like that's not acknowledged, that's like not something on their mind. It's almost like the show has forgotten about it. So like I get it, like in storytelling purposes, it seems like it'd be justified. But it's also like, man, why bring it up that early if it's not going to matter for the action? It seemed like maybe it was a pacing error. But I don't know. It could just be that this is a breakneck season that's really, really compressed into a scene. Like, you know, we're still on Christmas. So what do you think?
Yeah, I thought this episode was great. I think maybe the MVP of this whole episode is Vera. And I find myself sort of cringing when I say that, because when he came back at the end of season 3, I was like, fuck this. This is the last person I wanted to see in season 4. He's meaningless to the plot. Nothing they could do is of any consequence with this character. Why bring him back?
He's the wild card.
Now, yeah, I'm not so sure about that. And the performance that dude is putting in kind of made it all worth it, certainly in this episode. Now, I think it's still yet to be seen whether he's going to play a bigger role and a consequential role in the end of this story. I can't imagine that he won't if Sam Esmail bothered
to
bring him back.
Right? He's the one thing that neither Elliot nor White Rose accounted for in their game for world domination.
Right.
Like this 2-bit Manhattan or New York City gangster who wants to run the city, like such a grandiose goal from his standpoint, but such a minor like bit playing pawn. It's funny. It's like Philip Price getting brought down by Meter Maid.
Sure,
you know, all this unpaid parking tickets is what's going to bring you down. But he has a capacity to cause a lot of pain and suffering, particularly to Elliot and the people that he cares about. So
and his like warrior poet, like gangster poet thing is was a lot weirder before. In this episode, I found it like really, really good, really precise with its metaphor. Like other times I thought he was talking nonsense. Now it kind of works for me. So I don't know. I'm still a little bit up in the air on him, but I thought he did a great job this episode.
The other thing, with your 12 nights of theory, 12 nights of Christmas theory that you had last episode.
12 nights of theorizing.
I was looking for everywhere. Were there 6 geese a-laying?
I think they left that to the Watchmen this week because there are his eggs.
Eggs galore
over there.
I mean, the only thing I can think of is a little bitch laid about 6 goose eggs on the bully's skull when he beat him with the baseball bat, maybe. But yeah, I felt like the death howl was present, yeah. I felt like the death howl last episode is prescient. But it's weird that there was that many of those that worked in for the first 5 episodes, and then he just stopped. Like, because people were posting,
which makes me think I missed it. Just missed the 6.
The thing I saw on Reddit like all last week. People were posting like, look at this famous picture that depicts 6 geese, or look at like the ways you could make it work, and then I was looking for people, and there was a couple threads where people are saying, so where were the six geese? And there's zero responses. Like, the hive mind would have found them if they were there, unless it's some kind of like, you got to reverse the color and flip the screen
right.
and run it through it's a Bayesian.
The bricks. It's all about the bricks in that building, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If it's something, it's buried pretty far under the surface.
So is that brick theory. So they do have one episode of play in there, right? Because there's 13 episodes in the season, and we got 12 days of Christmas, so they do have an episode to skip. Maybe they
a mid 12-day hiatus?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right.
We'll see. I'm holding out hope for next week.
The geese were holding out for more money to make their appearance.
Yeah.
So they're negotiating.
Tell that to Darlene, Portia, and Carly. Tell it to them.
Yeah.
They won't be happy about that.
Mm-mm. And wait till the maids of Milken make their demands.
Right.
Some brief housekeeping. First up, on Swizzbold, our new network that Jim, Cecily, and I launched, the debut of Three Right Turns, a political podcast that I'm hosting. It's an introduction pod where I talk about my cultural, religious, and economic background and how it informs the show and the objectives of Three Right Turns. If that sounds cool, check out swizzbold.com or search for Three Right Turns wherever you listen to podcasts. Pickle Me This, our Rick and Morty podcast, is banging this week because the season premiere of Rick and Morty just dropped, season 4. It was amazing. It's a good time. There's a bunch of fascist Care Bears in it. Check that out on Pickle Me This. On Bald Move TV, Alexis and Cecily are doing his Dark Materials on HBO, aka her magical ferret hour. I'm still trying to figure out what the fuck even is dust. Also on Bald Move TV, Jim and I are going to be talking about The Mandalorian this week. We're going to be previewing that on the new Disney service. Bald Movies features Dr. Sleep last week. This week we're going to be seeing Ford versus Ferrari. Check that out if you're interested in those movies. We had the finale of American Horror Story. Our Watchmen podcast, We Do, is still weird as fuck. You can find the latest stuff we're doing at baldmove.com or search for any of these show names where you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Okay, let's talk about the actual episode with the recap.
Yes, let us do this.
All right, we start off with Vera telling Chris to the tale of a bully and a little bitch.
Uh-huh.
That's the whole scene.
Yep.
And it's great.
Uh-huh.
I my first point in my notes is this Vera's origin story? And of course it is. Of course
it seems like it. I mean, they play it enough that like it wouldn't surprise me if it turned out that it wasn't. But I mean, it seems like it. Mm-hmm. He's not denying it when she tried to turn the tables on him. I thought that was a pretty good kind of Joe Pesci, Goodfellas type of performance of like, oh, like Krista summoned up all of her courage and screwed it to the sticking place, and then he just like completely melted it. She had one punch in her, and then that was it.
Yeah. And she's gonna be his bat to kind of break Elliot down and repurpose him.
I love the minor chord carol of the bells that they played underneath the whole thing too. I love the way they use the Christmas music in this season. It's really good.
There's a lot of like just weird sort of lightly off-putting things about this scene, like the way he says Xmas. He says Xmas constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And even if I write Xmas, I usually say Christmas, and I think most people do.
Like, I say Xmas a lot, though.
You say Xmas?
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay.
I think it's because I'm not a Christian.
Yeah, sure.
So like it doesn't read offensive. It's just kind of like a playful, fun thing. It's kind of like saying LOL out loud.
Oh, I didn't find it offensive. Okay. Obviously, I'm not a Christian either.
He thought it just sounded stilted or unnatural.
Yeah. It was just something notable about his character. Where everybody else says Christmas, he says Xmas.
Yeah.
And I couldn't quite. I was trying to pin down what that meant. But
he's a frontline warrior on the war against Christmas. Yeah. He's not even going to say the name.
No.
Yeah. Happy holidays, happy Xmas. How about that, little bitch?
that's a good scene. And then we move on to Elliot and Darlene talking about the next step of the hack. And then Elliot apologizes for being an asshole. The entire time, Darlene is kind of staring at Angela's ballet slippers. And then Dom shows up at her house with a gun.
Yeah. And actually she's been there the whole time. That's the plot revolves around her hearing this entire conversation.
Yeah.
And it's bittersweet because, like, Elliot finally got a chance to, after not speaking last episode and his sister giving him that moment of grace, he admitted everything. And I think that's a lot of, like, she was just wanting the apology and the recognition.
Yeah.
But then she's not going to get to enjoy it because she gets a gun stuck in her face. There's a lot of exposition where, like, some things we were worried last episode about, like, boy, seems like if you had a cyber break into this big data warehouse that it would blow up your hack. That's not, no problems.
No problems whatsoever. They're getting all the network traffic.
Proxy attack on virtual realty is a go. They can see all the encrypted traffic.
They just have a piss poor IT administrator.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just the worst.
Or someone's trying to cover things up on Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. It just seems like, it's a little bit fast and loose here because I don't understand how the shell company works, right? So it's a virtual realty company, but like this administrator that Olivia has to call this episode, would he be informed that there was a break-in? And like, I'm just saying, like, you know, the way that they did such a great job of portraying that guard kind of like being appropriately aware. He wasn't like a Superman, but he, you know, he put together all these weird coincidences. Like, it seems that maybe Olivia's boss would have the same kind of thing. Like, this is a really odd request. Okay, I'll do it. And then, oh, she ghosts me for 3 phone calls. And then I call and she sounds kind of nervous. And also, there's nothing here for me to look at. Like, there's 3 or 4 weird things from his point of view. But I don't know. It's like, is this supposed to tell me that, like, none of that's important, I should stop worrying about it? Or is this going to get Elliot kinked up in an episode and two, and I'll slap my head and be like, oh, of course. I'm not sure.
I would think at the very least that with the Dark Army following Elliot, keeping eyes on Elliot, and we know that they are because they've got this photo and everything, maybe they're just doing it through Janice. Seems a little bit implausible that would be their only method of keeping an eye on Elliot, because they didn't even know about him know he was involved in this until after the fact.
Right.
But, like, you would think Dark Army would be aware that the building was broken into and go, oh, shit, that's actually, like, a very close tie to the source of our funds. Yeah. We need to do something about this. But White Rose is very much not concerned about that, which surprises me.
Yeah, I mean, but she is, too, because she's ordered to, like, everyone keep an extra. That's the thing. Like, she, in the beginning of the season, said, okay, well, we'll just keep a round-the-clock eye on Mr. Alderson. And they've lost track of him, and one of their vans is getting burnt, and one of the secure like linchpin facilities was broken into, and it's just like, again, if this was any other episode or season of Mr. Robot, I would think, well, this is going to be significant, but I don't know. It's a final season, and we're just trying to get to the end, so maybe we're just going to let some of the subtle points of the hacking slide. Not sure. It's a little bit disappointing, but
or she could be aware of all this and just think she's still got it under control.
Yeah,
and that she can bring Elliot in, convince him.
I wish they would acknowledge that, because like that would have made that scene between her and her assistant a lot stronger if she could like rattle off like, look at all the fucking weird shit, and you are just like ignoring all these flashing red. Then, you know that. But it's just weird. Like, I'm not sure if Mr. Robot's aware of the story they're telling at this juncture, but. Sure. It's not screwing up my enjoyment of the show. It's just something I'm noticing, and I wish I didn't.
Well, I mean, there are things that I think they certainly want us to hand wave away and or overlook themselves when they're telling the story. Because, I mean, remember what happened to Elliot last episode.
Sure.
Elliot was walking through the woods all frozen 2 episodes ago. The next episode, he's in a New York marathon sprint away from the cops. He gets hit by a fucking car. He's got his hands are all scraped up.
Falls
this episode,
off a cliff. Yeah.
Totally fine. No problem whatsoever. Yeah. So they're hand waving some stuff. And, you know, I'm willing to follow him down that path.
But there's a lot, like, this is like, there's 2 or 3 other weird things that, like, doesn't make sense fitting into the Mr. Robot universe. So I'm like, that's what I'm saying. Like,
Where are your lines, Aaron? What line will you not cross in following Mr. Robot?
Yeah, if Joey Badass can just get out of from under White Rose, no questions asked, then ahead is nothing but darkness as far as I'm concerned.
Irving did it. There's a precedent for that. Anyway, let's go over to Leon showing up to tell Elliot that he's now a full-time freelancer. He passes him something under the table, and he says, call me if you ever need anything. Mr. Robot tries to talk Elliot out of crossing whatever line he's about to cross at the coffee shop. So this is the same coffee shop. I don't know if people recognize this from season one, where he blackmailed this guy who had the child porn ring, and a whole bunch of shit going down on his computer. I don't remember the outcome of that, if he actually like got his store shut down or what, but it used to be Ron's Coffee. Now it's Todd's Coffee Shop.
Yeah.
So under that new, has changed hands.
No longer pedophile management.
Right. Or the guy changed his name to
it's a branding?
Create some anonymity.
It's a branding?
It's a branding thing,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, man.
Still running the ring. Still serving up hot.
What's
Java.
The new name?
Todd.
Todd.
Todd's Coffee.
Oh well, we'll know for sure if Subway brings back a suspiciously familiar mascot, and it's Subway Todd now.
Right. I'm Todd.
Uh huh. I lost a bunch of weight, Subway. That's all you need to know about me.
Don't go digging. This sets up a possible confrontation. This whole episode does between Leon and Vera, which I could not be more excited about.
Or Leon and Janice.
Yes, I'll take all three.
I mean, because I think Leon could whip all of them.
Yep.
Like,
Vera would be too busy giving some philosophical speech about a little bitch and a bat.
Just Vera's not ready for any. He's the level one boss thinking he's fucking King Koopa.
Yeah.
And he's going to find out he's not. Now, Janice...
He's a Koopaling at best.
Janice, like, Janice is kind of scary because I thought at this point of the last season that Irv was kind of a frivolous doofus character.
Okay.
And Irv was just a used car salesman. This lady's got a legitimately scary profession.
True.
So like Janice could bust out some fucking American ninja moves. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Or she's like the master with the knives or the scalpel or she might give Leon a run for his money, but you know, I Leon's a known quantity as far as the badass department is in his name.
That's true.
So yeah. I'm on team Joey Badass. He passed him the oxy under the table. Mm-hmm. I thought it's surprising. There's a lot of people on Reddit just completely missed. They're like, answers I need. Like, what did Leon pass the Elliot under the table? And I'm like, it's the drugs. It's the drugs. Yeah. He passed the drugs. But, yeah, like, so did you not... White Rose's organization... Like, Philip can't fucking get out of this thing clean. How can random hitmen get out of the organization?
My biggest question.
I'm thinking, like, this is, like, a flashing red danger sign that Elliot should see, and he doesn't. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, like, why is the Dark Army still looking for Elliot if Leon is still working for them? Like, hey, I just made contact with him. He's at the coffee shop. I'm following him. You know?
Yeah, that wouldn't make any sense.
So like there's a couple things where like I want to believe that I'm being misdirected, because what I think I understand about the Dark Army is that this kind of thing just doesn't happen. You know?
That people leave like that?
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, there's precedent. Irving can do it, but I mean, Irving's really high up. Like,
Irving felt like he was like at one point second command, and he's kind of like, you know, a retired member, a board of directors member, has come back to as a favor for the president of the company to do one last kind of troubleshooting project, and he's going to fuck off and finish his book. Like he has, you know,
they didn't allow Tyrell out. They didn't allow
Philip
out. Like. Yeah, no, it's a fine question, and I don't.
And that's the thing; it's messy, but I'm not sure if it's intentionally messy or if this is just like, well, we got to wrap this story up in one season, so we're taking some shortcuts. Messy. I'm fine either way. I just wish I wish I had a handle on it. Mm-hmm.
And then there's also during the scene a voiceover from Mr. Robot about Elliot's lines, and you know, because Elliot says, "Look, we're long past crossing lines."
Mm-hmm.
And this whole episode kind of revolves around what lines you will and won't cross, whether you even recognize there are lines, what that means, as far as any possible redemption for you. And we'll get further into that as we go through the episode.
Mm-hmm.
But for now, we move on to Dom, who asks Darlene about Elliot, where he is specifically. But she isn't giving up the info, so Dom calls Janice, who says she'll run it up the chain and get back to her, actually. There's a couple of code words they use when they call each other.
Clorox. Market. Yeah.
Just completely random as far as I can tell. I don't think there's any meaning behind those.
I wonder if there's some kind of rotating thing, like they got a code book where you're supposed to use the next one in sequence. And I just like,
oh yeah, if they're changing up cell phones in the Deus group every 5 days,
yeah,
they're changing up their code words.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Is like, this is why I don't want to just write off the Leon stuff and the what was the other thing we were talking about? Oh, the hack seeming like it is improbable that would go off is because they're still doing this like really smart field craft type things, showing that like, hey, don't forget that this is a smart show about hacking and observation and espionage. So it's confusing to me.
Then we go to Elliot at Olivia's house. He brings her a coffee and she invites him in. Once inside, Elliot reveals he knows about Cypress National and Deus and tells her to make a phone call to her boss to get him some login info so he can steal the credentials. She refuses and tells him to leave, so he reveals that he's actually drugged her coffee and reminds her she'll lose her kid if anyone finds out she's back on drugs.
Yeah.
Pretty fucked up.
Uh-huh. It's funny because that was his that was how he was going to get her to do the first part of it. I wonder... I mean, it's funny because he found this like third path, which is the way it works out. And Olivia plays this great. I don't know who this woman is, but her performance, she was so winning and likable and so like hurt and wounded and angry and defiant. And this one, I thought she did she's really, really arresting performance. But like Elliot trying to do this kind of like trying to do things the nice way, the velvet touch, just made the knife twist that much worse. Because if he just blackmailed her with the drugs in the first place, then he just comes back and be like, oh, well, you know, this is the thing about blackmail. You can never, ever, ever get away. Like every single time it's going to be easier to blackmail you because I've done it before. And if you were going to like stand up for yourself and turn me into the cops, you know, sunk cost fallacy, it's all that stuff. It's like, you know, him having to do this because he ran out of time and having to do it anyway after he's already slept with her and forged this emotional connection is just the fucking worst.
And I think you're supposed to be questioning in these scenes whether this was actually the fastest and really the only way to get what he needed. Because, I mean, Mr. Robot questions it, right? Like, there might be an easier way. And he says, no, this is the fastest. But, like, there's a lot of stuff in here that complicates that. And I think... when we get to the scene after she cuts her wrist, I want to talk about that because there's something in that performance that to me says there was another way, there was a middle path, and it was just as fast as the path that he chose, but far less devastating.
Well, the other thing is like, it made me wonder just in an actual kind of meta way, if someone's been clean sober for, what was it, 8 years?
Yeah.
Someone's sober for 8 years and then you randomly spike their coffee with a couple OxyContin. Did they fall off the wagon and they don't know about it? Would they actually fall off? Yeah, it's like, cause like otherwise she'd be like, Elliot leaves and like, oh, I had a nice conversation with Elliot and like, oh, I'm sleepy. Oh, I feel like, man, Christmas took it out of me. I'm going to take a nap. Like, I don't know. Cause my experience with the drug, of course, I've never taken it recreationally. Believe me, I tell you if I did, is it just makes me kind of sleepy, kind of like warm and sleepy. So I don't
never
know if like
take an Oxy, I don't know.
If I would drink a coffee laced with that, I think I'd just assume to like, oh man, holidays really took it out of me.
Yeah, what he didn't realize is the coffee just completely offset the effect.
Yeah,
wired her up. And then,
well, what he doesn't understand is that Starbucks puts a little bit of Oxy in all their coffee.
Right, he overdosed her accidentally.
That's why it's so expensive and you can't stop them.
Yeah, no, never done it. I couldn't tell you.
So I was wondering
if it's anything
like
Vicodin, then
yeah,
sure. It just
I mean, it'd be one thing if like he laced it like with like LSD or something like that, where it's like, oh yeah, you're going to know something's fucking up. Like you know, you're either going psychotic or you've been drugged. But something that just makes you feel kind of safe, warm, and sleepy. I'm not sure.
Yeah, and it's important in this scene to note that he mentions this massacre in El Salado, which I found that is something that not a lot of people know about. I certainly didn't. I didn't do a ton of research on it, but I know it's a real event that happened in 2000.
I assume when I first watched it was like a made up. Was there something that happened in Central or South America that I missed out on in the litany of things the White Rose has pulled? But no, it's... It's a real deal.
Yeah, and it's pretty heinous. If you're interested in finding out more information, Wikipedia has
it's a real life thing, unlike the Iraq Civil Wars or the Iraq Wars.
Right. Those totally things, fabricated by.
Yeah, those things are just totally made up by the Dark Army.
Okay, let's move on to White Rose getting an update on Elliot's status and her assistant urging her to eliminate Elliot. She refuses and tells her instead to find Elliot and bring him in so that she can explain the details of her plan to him and they can all be on the same side. Finally, three and a half seasons in,
mm-hmm.
we're finally going to get on the same page.
Yeah.
This couldn't have been explained day one when they met with the hard drives. Elliot, I got this plan.
Yep.
And I think you're the perfect hacker to help me pull it off.
Yep. Dom, Elliot, Darlene team up. Fuck it. That was last episode. It's all about the White Rose, Elliot.
Right.
The white robot.
Somehow Mr. I don't Rose. Think he's going to be convinced by whatever she has
what
to
does
offer.
She, what does she talk? I've got an idea, but I want to hear what your thought was when she goes, he just needs to realize that we're on the same side.
Yeah, I think this all comes down to whether it's delusional or not, her belief that she can bring back the people they've lost in some form. And I don't know what that takes. I don't know if that's a facsimile quantum computer version of Elliot's father or like what it is, but that's the core of it, I think.
I wonder, because that's my first kind of thought too, but when I was thinking about it more and I was trying to think of like, you know, what have we learned about White Rose this season that she couldn't like, you know, because why hasn't she made this statement before?
Mm-hmm.
Plenty of opportunities for her to say, you know, like, oh, we're just shadowy sides of the same coin, Mr. Elliot.
Yeah.
Mr. Anderson, Mr. Alderson. Sorry, I watched Matrix this weekend. It's stuck in my head. So her backstory revealed that her and her lover wanted to escape to America so they could be free and live their lives. Then she had the opportunity to be this minister of defense or security, and she saw an opportunity to change China mm-hmm. to make it more friendly for people like herself and her lover, right?
Mm-hmm.
And her lover bailed on that because he didn't have the patience and wherewithal to do that. But that's what Elliot's wanting to do, right? He wants to change the world to make it a better place from his standpoint. Yeah. They both are not big fans of democracy. They want to just pull these levers of power because it's what they think is right. It's what they think the world needs. Mm-hmm. I wonder if it's more of that, like she sees herself as trying to make the world a better place as like some kind of like a freedom fighter. And she thinks if she can explain it to Elliot in the right way that he'll be on board, in much the same way that Elliot's tried to articulate to other people. You know, like Olivia, he tried to get Olivia on her board today and she's like, you're a fucking monster. You know, like you don't even see it. I wonder if there's something to that she sees herself as some kind of freedom fighter fighting for a better tomorrow. And she thinks she can convince Elliot of that.
She's got to convince me too, because I've seen all the harm that she's done.
But that's the thing, like Mr. Robot says, like once you cross all the last line, it's nothing but darkness ahead. Like, so what is the difference between Elliot and Mr. Robot other than Mr. Robot can still see the last line he crossed? What's the difference between White Rose and Elliot? Because sure. You know, White Rose has been doing this a lot of time. She's much, 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 much further over those last lines. If you think that Elliot crossed the last line here, then, you know, what is the difference between them?
And there may not be. That may be the same side that they're on. Mm-hmm. It's just the side of being monsters. And we may turn on both of them by the end of this series. If you haven't already, like if this episode didn't do it for you.
Because that's the thing. It's like, you know, you can, the ends justify I'm partial to the ends sometimes justifying the means. Like, you mm-hmm. know, like if you don't believe that, then you'll never, ever, ever believe in ever going to war or defending yourself or doing any kind of like moral harm to do some kind of larger goal.
Yeah.
But yeah, like the fact that Elliot's already done all this
but
stuff.
But it encourages us to question where are our lines with that, right?
Like
this whole episode is about those lines.
And Elliot took a shot. He did it and he did nothing but make the rich richer and the poor poorer. So like, you know, it's a certain lack of humility to think, oh, what I need is a second shot.
Mm-hmm.
And oh, if that fucks up, well, then I just need a third shot. Like that's how you get to be White Rose.
Yeah.
That's how you start civil wars in Congo, because it'll all be worth it in the end. And I think that's what they're playing with. I also think they're playing with that with Vera, too.
Mm-hmm.
That like you're supposed to see like they're just the same person at executing at three different levels of society.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense.
Did you look into any of the equations that are on that big board that White Rose is standing in front of?
Yeah, I saw the equations, or the long ass equation uh-huh. on the left side of that board, or slide, whatever the hell it is probably some kind of quantum computing equation, quantum mechanics equation. Mm-hmm. The right side, I glanced at something that talked about what the top was, but the bottom is probably some kind of representation of a two slit experiment.
The double slit experiment.
Yeah. Which I think we talked about an episode or two ago.
Did we? Okay.
I think so, yeah.
It's a complicated topic, uh-huh. but it just seems like it's just science stuff.
Yep.
Because there's a couple of physics, physics majors and people with physics degrees in the Mr. Robot subreddit all kind of coming to a quorum that it's just random quantum mechanics stuff and just pretty standard, like, first year type of lecture type things on the double slit experiment. And if you want to know more about that, it's way out of the scope of this podcast to explain
it. Multi-worlds theory.
It's all very fascinating. And yeah, so to do a YouTube mm-hmm. search for double slit experiment and it'll sort you out. I don't think it has anything to do with this season or the show, other than
I don't know why White Rose would be standing there contemplating these equations and representations.
What I mean is, I don't think
it's
going to, like, if you believe that this is going to be some sci-fi extravaganza to end Mr. Robot, then like this is red meat. But if you think that like White Rose is delusional, or that the plan might touch on these things, but it's not going to be like literal time travel, it's not going to dissuade you either way. Like,
there's no
like decoding the end of Mr. Robot on his whiteboard is what I was trying to say.
Right. And I don't think there's any decoding the end of Mr. Robot, period, until we get there, because the dichotomy here is White Rose is delusional, or White Rose believes in something that's true. Like, there's no way to resolve that within the confines of the show until we get to that moment where they try it, and it either doesn't work or it does work, right?
Yeah.
So hopefully by the end of this, we'll see the experiment actually go off. Although I did see a lot of talk about, like, you know, perhaps the experiment has been done before, and like that's, you know, what the Washington Township stuff was all about. And I think some of that is interesting and might lend a little bit of credence to the idea that she's tried it before.
It would be funny if she pulls the Ozymandias from the Watchmen and it's like, this all went down over Thanksgiving, you fool.
Right.
You're running around setting vans on fire and hacking realtors. And
to my assistant, don't you feel like an idiot?
Yeah, drugging, say, I'm just doing it for my own amusement.
Yeah, I've been gaslighting you for a month.
I have to fool literally the entire globe, including my trusted lieutenants and advisors, before I feel safe and secure and where I'm at in the world.
Okay, let's move on to Janice. She calls back and tells Dom to kill Darlene, and she'll be there to collect the phone, which they can use to track Elliot. Dom is obviously conflicted by this, but says she can handle killing Darlene. So she shoves Darlene into a bathtub. Darlene pleads for her life, takes responsibility for ruining Dom's, says they can fix this tonight if she just have a little patience. And so instead of killing her, Dom butts her with the gun to just have some time to think. To just shut her up so she can clear her head, figure out what to do.
I mean, I don't know, because like, that's the thing that's interesting, is that and the previous on, they showed that like really cold line that Dom spits at Darlene, that you deserve nothing but misery and agony. But also Dom is, I think she truly believes she deserves that, but Dom's her, like Darlene exploits, is she's a good person, and she believes in law and order and justice, and this ain't it, chief. So she's having a real problem with it. But like Darlene taking responsibility for her, for what she did to her at the end of a barrel of a gun. I mean, that's addict talk, man.
Sure.
Like, yeah, okay. I won't ever do it again. I just promise. You just gotta let me know. Don't call the cops. Come on, man. Come on. Don't flush that down the toilet. Like, it's all this shit that she's saying. I don't know what's real and what's not real. I don't even know if Darlene does.
Yeah.
That's why it's just like you feel bad for anyone that gets caught up with the Alderson family, because they just fucking ruin your life, man.
Yeah, I mean, I remember that scene where, you know, Dom and Darlene are in the bar, and Darlene is trying to, you know, get in Dom's pants so she can get this badge or whatever.
Yeah.
She goes to the bathroom and she like steals herself for like, she has to really like mentally prepare herself to do the thing she's about to do to Dom. So I do think there's a little bit of Darlene that like feels really bad about what she did to Dom. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, yeah, you're right. At the barrel of a gun, you are just saying whatever you're going to say to get out of the situation.
Yep.
You're pulling all their strings.
Yeah, because the alternative is death, which yeah. you're going to get anyway. So why mm-hmm. not?
Okay, we move on to Olivia making the call to her boss. She tries to guilt Elliot about drugging an addict, but Elliot punches back, telling her she brought this on herself by working for Deus. She asks how many people have had to suffer for Elliot to get what he wants and whether it was worth it. And then she dismisses herself to the bathroom and cuts her wrists. We don't know that until the next scene, do we?
No, you hear a thump.
But I immediately assumed.
I think you actually hear a thump at the end, which causes like Elliot to sit up straight and Mr. Robot to stop monologuing for a minute.
Okay.
This actor is incredible. Like, you know, when she goes off to the bathroom with, you know, this was fucking me part of the plan, her happy accident, and Elliot kind of sheepishly reveals it was an accident. She's like, "Oh, that's sweet." Mm-hmm. I think she's great, and it's yeah. like, I don't know. It's really, who's got the moral high ground here?
It's tough to say, but I don't know,
because we're essentially
is it a matter of scale here.
We're essentially dealing with like a white collar mafia bookkeeper, right? Mm-hmm. You know, only like on a yeah. like not like even on a much vaster, like Al Capone's bookkeeper times 1,000.
Yeah. And she's not the driving force behind this. She's certainly an enabler.
Right.
But Elliot, on the other hand, is uh-huh. the driving force behind all of the damage he's caused.
Right. And
so, yeah, I think she wins this argument.
So here's the. Okay. Well, maybe I'll let this plot develop a little bit before I ask the question about is Elliot dark or darkest in this scene?
Okay. Yeah, we'll definitely come back to this. Vera's not getting the dirt he wants on Elliot from Krista, and his threats aren't working either. There's the whole scene revolves around like Krista, in my mind, appropriately pinning this little bitch tag on mm-hmm. Vera, which he takes some exception to. But of course, this whole threatening scene is interrupted when Jason knocks on the door.
Yeah.
And Vera says, "Oh, should we invite him in?" Like, threatening.
I mean, just right there, like she's already like deflated just by him being menacing. And then mm-hmm. when she realizes, "Oh, right, my boyfriend." Is that realistic? I guess if you're in this terrified situation, maybe your brain doesn't go to like the most scary thing that could happen. But like, she knew her boyfriend is on the way.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. She's just a civilian, and Vera's a real scary dude.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine what it would be like to have someone break into your house and hold you at knife point and threaten you and threaten your loved ones.
It's sounds awful.
Don't want to be in that situation if I can help it.
Yeah, this is a good scene because I do think Krista pegs him. Like the fact that he, you know, is telling...
Just because she pegs him doesn't make him a little bitch, Jim. Come on.
God.
Lots of men enjoy ass play.
Has pinned the label on him correctly. Let uh-huh. me rephrase. Yeah, and it's
that's
telling.
That's a special relationship she had with Elliot. That's the...
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
You want to know what's next to his file in the cabinet?
Well, wait till he finds out the next file is Dr. Manhattan.
God. if you're not watching Watchmen right now, you're going to have to because this whole podcast is apparently going to be a companion podcast.
You know what? I can't wait. I can't wait. Shows. I hope they read the comics. I hope they watch the movie. I hope they get 5 episodes into the season and realize they did it just because they wanted to understand me making a dick joke.
Yeah. Okay. Why is Vera so emotional in this scene?
I think he's just fucking with her. Like, he plays the, like, yeah. He's very smart. Mm-hmm. And he knows what she's trying to do. And he knows probably what in her wildest fantasy that she thinks is going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, that he can have this emotional breakthrough that, like, she could talk him out of it and, like, "Oh, thanks, Miss Krista. You really turned my life around. I'm going to mm-hmm. take me and them boys are going to really have a good think about it." And he's, like, fucking plays into it mm-hmm. just to fuck with her. I think that's what's happening. And then when her boyfriend shows up, it's just, like, you know, game over.
Yeah, so the second half of the story is
this is his version. This is his version of holding her hand and being there for her. You know, like he's just doing whatever psychological. It's almost like he's I'm sure she has some kind of degree in psychology, but like he's running circles around her. But it's easy to do so.
It's easy to do at the knife point, yeah.
Yeah, like I imagine therapy would be wildly more effective if the therapist could threaten you with a baseball bat.
Right.
You know, like, you don't stop this fucking bullshit. Mm-hmm. You don't start you know, owning up to your mistakes. You're going to get the slugger right upside your skull. Probably not, actually. Just it'd lead to more avoidance behavior, dishonesty, and further shame, fear cycles that would just make the person's life worse. But
if they had a grapefruit spoon...
That's What you can't do with a baseball bat, you can certainly do with the with the grapefruit spoon. And if all else fails, pegging.
All right, let's move on. Please, God. Elliot patches up Olivia's wrist and makes her return her boss's calls. She reveals that her mom died in that El Salvador massacre that they talked about, which Deus was responsible for. Elliot promises to stop them if she just makes the call, so she does. Elliot gets the credentials. Before he goes, Olivia tells Elliot that he's the worst kind of monster because he doesn't know he's one.
All right, so here's my question.
Yeah.
Is Elliot, because we know Elliot's on the spectrum, and he misses people's social cues and doesn't understand them a lot. Mm-hmm. Did the fact that she told him... 12 hours ago that if she ever tried Oxy that she would just kill herself, and she has a razor blade in her Oxy bottle to remind her of that. Did that just slip his mind? Did he not think that that would... Did he not understand humanity enough to know that that's a likely outcome of letting her go to the bathroom? Or... Did he count on her using the razor blade, and the razor blade is like the aluminum bat that he used to break her, and then he bandaged her wrist up to show concern over her... So, and then got her on her side about the El Salado thing, and that is actually his plan the whole time.
I was ready to shit all over your theory until you brought in the bat.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think that, like, you're supposed to understand that, like, Vera, Elliot, and White Rose are literally the same people with the same ends.
Wait, we can't say that on this show.
Okay,
they're
you're right.
Same people.
They're metaphorically operating under the same paradigm of this
much
what
better.
They're trying to find a baseball bat to break someone and then own them.
Yeah.
Because that's what he does. Mm-hmm. Like, and the thing is that if that theory is correct, then this could be like the third personality at work, because we know one of the working theories is this third personality is like Elliot at his most ruthless. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we've seen much of that. Like, we've heard Darlene say, like, at his worst, he's like a sociopath.
Yeah.
And this is sociopathic behavior. It's just a thought. Definitely buy that Elliot's this oblivious, but the fact that she did that, he went right in, he saved her. They had this bonding moment about the El Salado where I thought she was just about to go like fully on his side. And yeah, I think there's intentional symmetry there.
Yeah. And it took me a second watch to realize that part of the reason that she... I don't think the razor blades are all about, backsliding and losing her son and her whole life being ruined. I think a good chunk of that is about the realization she's been working for the people who killed her mother.
Mm-hmm. And being afraid of that, yeah. Just
the realization that, yeah, she's been unwittingly helping the people that ruined her life already.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was extra. It had a little bit of extra on it the second time I watched it, and again, fantastic from both actors. So we go back to Vera, who does not invite Jason in. Instead, he stands at the window and laughs at him.
What an asshole!
I know.
Like, God, so
yeah. He also finishes the story of the little bitch, the bat, and the bully. The point is that Vera has to wound Elliot's soul so he can rebuild him, and to that end, Krista offers up the file she has on Elliot's other personality, Mr. Robot.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you this. Do you think there could be more in that file than just Mr. Robot? Or perhaps, given that seemingly Vera has more of a background in philosophy and therapy than Krista does here, could he see something in this file that tells him there's more than just a Mr. Robot there. There's something else.
Well, I'm not even sure what would... It's played like a hammer, right? Mr. Robot, dun, 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 cut the commercial. But how do you use Mr. Robot? Because, like, what is Mr. Robot? Is Mr. Robot the complicated, fractured relationship that Elliot has with his father? Is Mr. Robot, like, the fact that he's got split personalities and you can do something like that? But it's not like, this isn't season one Elliot where that would, like, literally mind-fuck him. He's aware of this. He's been fighting it for years. Like,
is it a blackmail thing with knowing he caused 5-9? Like... What is the bat part of Mr. Robot? I can't say that I see it.
Yeah, me exactly. Either.
Which is why I asked the question, is there something else? Could he get at this third, you know, third altar?
Does Krista know about the third? Because
there's been some speculation about it, because when we join up with their therapy, it drops us in the middle of it. And she talks about, like, oh, no more of the outbursts. Like, there's a very angry side to Elliot early on that's before the show even starts.
Well, plus we, like, you know, a lot of times I forget about this, but when Mr. Robot started, Elliot had kind of rebooted his whole life. He had forgotten about his involvement in F Society. He had forgotten that he had a sister. He tried to kiss his sister because he was sexually attracted to her. Like, there's a lot of fucked up things that happened that, you know, like, he realized or remembered the truth and snapped back to who he was, and what does that mean? Like, it's like, is Vera just going to make fun of him for trying to kiss his sister? Yo, dude, you want to fuck your sister? That's pretty fucked up, man. Mm-hmm. You getting all fucking Lannister up in here, dog? Like, I don't know. It's something, I think they need to explain it, because to me, it's not enough to just say, what am I going to find there, Mr. Robot? Mm-hmm. Like,
I agree, and they will. Yeah. You know, we'll see this play out.
Yeah.
Here's the other thing that a lot of people seemed to want explained. The metaphor itself. Who is who in this metaphor? Which surprised me, because I think it's very, very clear that Vera is the little bitch.
Sure. There was a part of me that thought there's an outlier that he might be the bully, and they're going to, like, that he was going to tell the tale about a time when a little bitch stepped up to him and he crushed him.
Yeah.
But no, clearly.
I mean, you get to the end and the stuff with ICU, like, that's what he says. That's how you own somebody. Mm-hmm. So, like, who owns Vera? No one owns Vera. If he's the bully in that situation, he can't be the bully in that situation.
Nobody might own Vera, but I think Leon's got a mechanics lien against him.
Absolutely.
He's going to pull that on him. But
he's one missed payment away from being repossessed for sure. But
this is Vera's backstory, and it would surprise me. I mean, I guess it wouldn't surprise me if this was a bunch of bullshit. But I don't know why that would be interesting. It's too late in the game to be pulling games like that.
Yeah. And importantly, I think this is a lot of character development for Vera. Much needed character development. I don't know that we knew much about him.
Yeah.
Period. Other than he was an asshole.
Yeah. He's just like this gangster philosopher guy.
But
he's definitely got an edge to him. He's got, he's got Miss Krista, tied up in knots anyway.
Okay, let's go to Dom and Darlene. She's got 5 minutes left to decide whether she's going to kill Darlene. And Darlene wakes up, and when she does, she tells Dom tells her to unlock her phone. Instead of doing that, they talk about the night they spent together. Dom runs out of time and takes Darlene to the living room, where she asks Darlene to kill her. Of course, Darlene has trouble doing that, and before she can, Janice and two goons walk in at the exact worst time. Darlene has wiped her phone, making her an asset rather than a corpse, temporarily at least. But Dom's in big trouble now too.
That was a great scene, because I thought that they were going to try to pull some horseshit shot in the shoulder business, and I'm like,
she just wanted her to kill her.
Yeah, but then when she's like,
right,
no,
in the sternum, like,
not just kill me. It's the only way my family would be safe. It's the only way you're safe. I'm miserable. Pull the fucking trigger. I don't want to pull the trigger. And then Janice and the two Dark Army goons walking in and being like, well, well, well.
Yeah.
It's a great scene. And Darlene taking the opportunity to wipe her phone. So she now has borrowed a little bit of time for herself. That was really great. It's a great scene. I feel so bad for Dom. Dom's gotten the worst shake out of anybody. And just Grace Gummer does such a great job of playing this character that's frozen in the predicament that they're at, mm-hmm. that they're in. It's too bad.
Yeah, it's going to be painful for her, as Janice says.
I don't know what she... I also... Do you believe, Darlene, that there is something real to their date, or is this just a wounded animal trying to talk themselves out of a trap?
No, I think I believe her, but it's also a little bit of the latter, yeah.
And then what does it mean, even? Like, if, like, you know, if... Elliot, you have put a gun to Elliot's head and say, did you feel anything for Olivia? Like, oh, maybe you did, but who cares?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing. It's like, it's a the frustrating thing is like, Darlene's literally begging for her life. And it's almost like begging a bullet that you yourself fired at your own head not to kill you. Because like Dom points out that like everything that's happening to you right now is because of you. You pulled me into this. And it's such a weird position that it's such a weak position that Darlene's trying to beg for her life. It's like one of the most pathetic, weak begging for life I've ever seen in fictionalized cinema.
Wow, that's a strong statement.
Well, think about it. Like, literally, like, she... this.
I mean, I don't have any counterexamples off the top of my head, but wow.
I mean, this wasn't, like, she wasn't in the wrong place or wrong time. Like, her machinations and scheming and getting Dom into all this shit is mm-hmm. what has caused her to be, her life to be in mortal danger, both of them.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
And she's saying, do the right thing, you're a good person, do the right thing. Why? Because you're a piece of shit? Mm-hmm. I should do the right thing for a piece of shit? You wouldn't do the right thing.
Yeah.
We've seen what you would do when you need to silence somebody. Come on, Darlene. It's, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the other stuff that I like about the scene is it along the line of the theme of this episode being, you know, what lines won't we cross?
Uh-huh.
Dom clearly has a line.
Yeah,
and no, unlike Elliot, she does not cross that. Yeah. Which I liked. Also, man, this episode, I saw it. I can't unsee it. Janice looks like a large version of Kristen Schaal, right? Am I wrong about that?
Yeah. I can see that.
Okay.
Like a big sister.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
All right.
It's kind of freaking me out when I watch the episode now. Here's the interesting thing. So Darlene might have saved her life by wiping her phone. But this has consequences also, because now she can't track Elliot.
Right.
So she's kind of out of the loop on the whole hack thing. I mean, Elliot ends up in a fucking trunk this episode, so... Mm-hmm. You know, he's out of the loop too. Mm-hmm. I have no idea if this hack is going to go off at all.
What if Darlene has an emergency button where she hits a certain number of key sequences on her virtual keyboard, and it just pretends like it's wiping.
Oh, okay, yeah,
yeah. It's
and then turns off.
It's the fake camera firmware update from last episode, just on a phone.
I doubt it.
Also, that's the fastest phone wipe I've ever seen.
Although
with modern phones where you can't pull the battery out, I don't even know how you would stop. Like, once you activated a firmware wipe, like, what would you do within, like, the 2 minutes to stop it? Like, smash it? Like, you just throw it on the floor, try to beat its brains out until it, recoverable? Because you got to find Elliot, now, right?
Then you take the SIM card and the memory chips over to White Rose.
Yeah, hopefully they're not broken. Them. You take them to a data recovery service on Christmas. You try to get, It's a good play by Darlene.
Oh yeah,
sloppy work from Janice.
She turns herself into an asset instead of a corpse. Like I said, it's the only thing that saves her life here.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it saves Dom, how much does Darlene care? But B,
well, saving Dom is the fact that she's still useful. I wonder what she was going to do, because the thing is Janice, like, this is the other blackmail problem, is that like, everyone's got a breaking point where it's like, okay, let's say that she kills her mom in some graphic way. Like, at what point does Dom be like, you know what? Fuck this. I'm burning you down. Like, mm-hmm. maybe a couple more of my family members die, but I'm saving who knows how many families in the future by taking me. I'm going to make myself into a suicide bomb, mm-hmm. take my whole family with. Like, you got to worry. And I was wondering, like, what is she planning on doing? Because there's only so many people that you can kill that's important before the person reaches that breaking point.
Yeah. Here's the best theory I've seen, and I'm not sure if I've seen this theorized or just like, hey, we love dogs, but they got a family dog,
mm-hmm.
and we've seen Janice
oh,
what's it called?
Taxidermy
this dog. for the last couple episodes.
That
That'd be pretty painful.
That old chonker getting taxidermied. Oh.
And like you're saying, you can't go straight for the throat with this. You have to make it painful, but not so painful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we're going to see a taxidermy.
I can't wait till her mom calls next episode and is like, "Dom, it's the damnedest thing."
She's not moving.
she was playing in the middle of the road, and out of nowhere, six different delivery vans T-boned her simultaneously.
Oh, God.
Every one of those vans that she's got the license plate simultaneously ran over the dog.
They all had a goose laying an egg on the side.
Yeah,
it's the damnedest thing.
There's the six. They finally negotiated it in the seventh episode.
Oh, boy. Okay, let's move on to the final scene. Mm-hmm. Mr. Robot tries to talk about the line they just crossed, but Elliot is still on mission. Krista calls Elliot and warns him that she gave all of his info to Vera. He asks her to meet at Washington Square Park, and he heads that way, but he is grabbed by Vera's goons and shoved in a trunk.
Yeah.
Why does Elliot give a shit about this? Here's my number one question for the end of this. Why does he give a fuck? He has a matter of hours to save the world. Everything else he's doing is completely on mission. Do not care about anything else, and yet he takes the time here to possibly meet up with Krista.
Well, I guess, do you believe that the third personality was involved in him fucking over Olivia? Because if so, it could be that, like, his dominant, gentle Elliot persona has taken over, and now, because it doesn't make sense that he just was willing to flush a single mother's life down the tubes.
Yeah.
And then his therapist, he's going to drop everything on this very crucial day. Mm-hmm. But there, you know,
you could explain it with, yeah, various personalities taking over.
Right.
Coming in and out of the
but
equation.
It's a little that I'm telling you, this episode, it might be a case of, and we've seen this before in final episode seasons, that sometimes you don't quite have everything in the right place to get to the end you need, and you gotta, you know, like you gotta take a rough dirt road to get there. But this episode, as much as I like it, is a little sloppy Joe on the plotting. Mm-hmm. And which was built on the kind of sloppy Joe hack from last episode. So, like, those are all great questions. I don't know that they have real world answers. It seems like there are a lot of writerly answers that we needed this to happen so that this could happen, so that, you know, Vera could catch, because, like, White Rose can't catch up with him, but, like, you know, like, why doesn't White Rose try this? Mm-hmm. You know, why doesn't White Rose try to the kidnap someone important to Elliot? You know, why didn't they just imprison Angela? Like, just snatch her up and take her somewhere, keep her on ice, keep her in that murder apartment complex that they
keep.
Yeah,
yeah. Because she wasn't as much of an asset, I guess. More of a threat, less of an asset.
Yeah. But I mean, I just like that. I just.
But
I don't
yeah,
know.
I feel you. Maybe I mean, White Rose is clearly monitoring them in some form. So maybe White Rose knows that he got abducted.
But then why did she send Janice to find him?
Mm-hmm.
Like, is the left hand not knowing what the right hand is?
Yeah,
that's
fair.
Is this?
But at the same time, like, she's ordering, "I'll bring him in." Well, I mean, how are you gonna do that until you find him?
Well, she's just demanding. She's just being the classic, like, asshole boss of, like, "Hey, it's going to take six. James T. Kirk telling Scott, or Scotty telling James T. Kirk, it's going to take 6 hours to fix the warp drive." And he's like, "That's not good enough, Scotty. I need an hour." And he's like, "Oh, fucking K. I guess I'll just do it then." You know, like, that's pretty hacky, but it's the way Hollywood works. Like, a powerful evil boss can just scream an unreasonable demand and their henchmen make it happen.
Right.
No, it's like I said, I feel like it's a little sloppy Joe. Not so fatal. It's the middle of the season. It's ready to pivot into the kind of end arc, and this thing can take a get ahead of steam, but, like, it definitely needs to tighten up and start following through with the rules and the logic of the world it's built.
Yeah, so I mean, we've talked about all the stuff we're not supposed to be thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
How about the stuff we are? This meeting is happening tonight.
Yep.
In a matter of, like,
7 p.m.
five hours
yeah,
or so.
Yeah.
Elliot just got kidnapped. Darlene is you know, in the hands of the Dark Army, so White Rose has her, but mm-hmm. Elliot's off the board. How is this hack gonna go down? Is the Deus group takedown just null and void at this point?
When does he have to have the hack? I mean, that's the other thing.
He's got to get in that room or close enough to that room to be able to hack all the cell phones of the people in it.
Uh-huh.
In that Benson's or whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever restaurant they're going to.
And then that's going to steal all their money?
That's going to give him, I think, the ability to get the authorization to transfer out all the funds or something. I couldn't tell you exactly. It's very convoluted at this point. There's 15 different hacks that need to happen.
That's the thing. Like, I still don't, the core mechanic of what they're trying to do, I don't quite, like, how
they're trying to steal the money is what they're doing. They're trying to wipe out all of Deus Group's funds, thereby rendering them inert, essentially. Which to me is hilarious because they say, oh, once all the funds are gone, you know, that's the end. I mean, White Rose still has control over the entire Dark Army.
Well,
there's going to be retribution.
Like, I'm thinking like there's this Swiss banker that like it's good that all this money is going, because it's not like he's going to like the Joker stack it up in a pyramid and set it on fire. Right. Really, it's not.
It's going to be a digital transfer.
It's
going
to transfer some digital account to some, like, I don't know, Switzerland bank or like fucking Grand Cayman Islands. And there's like going to be this banker that takes a phone call from an irate White Rose, mm-hmm. leader of the Deus Group that owns the whole fucking world. He's going to say, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Miss Rose, but our privacy banking standards guarantee right. our clients the ability. Like, that's the thing. It's like this, okay, we're getting taught dab again.
Right.
The one thing that drives me fucking crazy is like sometimes I feel like Sam Elliott just cannot abide by the rules that he has set for his own universe. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes, like the way, like, and then this could be part of the plot. Like it could be that like Elliott thinks he's gonna have White Rose by the short curlies, and he's not because like she's White Rose and she controls the whole fucking world. The banking, like lock, stock, and two smoking barrels. So I don't know. It is stuff I'm worried about though, because there's already the show has got like such a high ceiling, but also a very low floor, because there's already a lot of people on Reddit that haven't gotten a memo about like, this is probably not going to be a sci-fi, you know, dark city kind of ending going on here. And like, they're going to be just let down when that doesn't happen. And Sam Esmail has like tried to say like that's not going to happen. So like those people are probably going to be disappointed anyway. And then if it turns out that there's a lot of corners cut to get to that, you know, the ending is important to the show.
I think so.
This has not been a journey. It's more it's been more of a destination type show. And
it's both. But yeah, I mean the ending is certainly important. Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing the resolution of this four season arc. And if it's not satisfying on some level, I'm going to be disappointed. Yeah,
it'd be a bummer.
Mm-hmm. All right, that's the end of the episode.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hear the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
House of the Dragon Season 2 is coming up sooner than you think. And to get us all back in that Leal state of mind, Aaron and I have teamed up with Maester Anthony to bring you coordinated coverage, new and old. For the next 10 weeks leading up to Season 2, Maester Anthony will be releasing an episode of his Season 1 coverage on the Hot D podcast. He originally recorded and released it exclusively on his Double Dragon podcast, so while it's retro coverage, it's almost certainly new to you.
In addition, each Friday, Jim and I will be reading the relevant sections of George Martin's Targaryen history book, Fire and Blood, so that we can compare and contrast it to that week's episode of Hot D Season 1. So grab a copy of Fire and Blood and read along with us if you're so inclined. Just don't read ahead, unless you enjoy spoilers.
If that's not enough to satisfy your craving for fantasy entertainment, well, you're in luck. We recently watched King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, which is Guy Ritchie's uniquely stylish and anachronistic riff on the King Arthur legend. Yes, Guy Ritchie took on the most famous of all English legends and did it with huge ambitions. Sadly, or perhaps thankfully, depending on your tastes, his ambitions were cut short by meager audience interest. Join us for the podcast this Tuesday as we discuss why that might have been and whether this retelling is any good.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Feedback sent to robot at baldmove.com, or you can go to our forums, forums.baldmove.com, to discuss your latest theories with your fellow fans. I did get a surprise amount of feedback from people saying that they didn't realize there wasn't dialogue last episode until we pointed it out.
What?
Yeah. Some sheepish people. Some sheepish people.
I mean, I'm not making fun of them. I'm just like shocked that you wouldn't realize.
I mean, like I said, I cop to like, even though I was the one that said, hey, it's going to happen, like being 15 minutes into the episode before I realized, oh shit, yes, this is the silent episode. So like, yeah, okay. It can happen. Especially
but watching
like,
the whole episode,
man, a lot of people like do, because that's the other thing is like, I'd say is like, maybe they're background watching, but like if you background watch that episode, it's not watching it at all.
Oh,
it's like,
yeah, yeah.
It's like you can't background watch foreign films either because you can't
you have to
like
read subtitles.
I mean, at least I can. I can't literally look at subtitles and what's going on my screen on my cell phone, because that's what usually when we're saying background watching is what we're doing. We're playing on the cell phones. But yeah, no, if you got good company or several people making that same claim. So let's move on to John G. Said, I wanted to say that people who complain about the no dialogue episode is too gimmicky. This is a hacker show about hackers, and Sam Esmail is doing something with the show structure just for the fun of doing it, just to show that he can, and that's about the most hacker thing anyone can do, since so much of hacking is about showing off that you can do what you can do to your hacker friends and just being silly. That is a pretty good defense of art for art's sake in a hacker show, because that's super, especially early hacker culture and like demo scene culture was like...
Man, today I wore my 2600 hoodie in honor of old school hacking.
Yeah, it's just it doesn't have to have a point, it just has to be impressive and clever.
Yeah,
and that is certainly a fitting description of last episode, so good on you, John G. Kenny A, wanted to hear your take on Vera to see if you are annoyed by him as me. I honestly don't remember him from the early seasons, but my biggest gripe is that he looks like a cartoon character in that stupid pimp coat of his, and they keep presenting him in cheesy cliffhanger-type moments.
Well, he's in the Kill Bill suit this time.
It's true.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of Negan with his hipster-ass scarf and leather jacket, or Abraham Eugene Rosita with her goofy-ass-looking crew-cut mullet Tomb Raider outfit. It bugged me on The Walking Dead, but I gave it a pass because it was based on a graphic novel. But then there's just something about Vera that seems forced, like they're trying too hard to make him ominous. Every time I see him, I get pulled out of the moment and it breaks suspension disbelief for me. It's like he's in a bad Broadway costume or something. Do you guys agree? So I've always liked this kind of like gangster philosopher character. You know, like I'm thinking like Stringer Bell in The Wire, or Boyd Crowder and Justified.
Fuck yeah.
Like these people from like very low socioeconomic backgrounds that are nevertheless just like the raw intelligence shines through, and they don't talk right, they don't dress right, and they don't present well, but you underestimate them and they'll fuck you. So that this guy slots right into this, and I think he's like even more so this season. Like he's kind of been more of a clownish type character, but these extra facets have really come and shined up on this last season. So it's not bothering me at all.
Yeah, I think he's been a victim of no characterization through the early going. Yeah. And I'm appreciating him. Like I said, this episode, I appreciated him a lot more. Even at the end of season three, I was not on board with Vera. But I think like the difference between him and a Negan and like some other characters on The Walking Dead is they don't go overboard with Vera, like in my opinion. They don't show him as often. He doesn't have as much to do. And so his mannerisms, which, yes, are quirky as fuck, don't annoy me as much because I'm not exposed to them. I'm not immersed in them all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas Negan, he's bouncing up and down.
He's got that 45
swinging his bat.
Lean.
He becomes a joke by the 150th time he's delivered a monologue.
Yeah.
You know, Vera's had like what, 3 monologues the whole series, like serious ones. So I'm okay with it.
Also, I'm wondering if you could explain the figures of young Elliot and his mom for me. They showed up when he was dying, and I thought they were like the third or fourth alternate personality for Elliot. Then when they were in the conference room talking about waiting for the other one, it made me wonder if there would be a fifth alter ego. It doesn't seem to add up, but I haven't really heard another explanation to explain why they're doing and why they could be seen by Elliot and seem to know about the three personalities. Yeah, Kenny, like, this is where I'm saying, like, what, we got 5 episodes, 7 episodes? No, we have like a lot. We have a lot of episodes that left to go. But it is, I'm sympathetic because anytime you have a show that starts and then you're going to have like 5 episode arc that takes place in 24 hours, there's just not time for characters to like touch base with these long season long mysteries and arcs. It's like a it's a weakness of the pacing of this type of structure, because it seems like I was saying, like, why haven't we talked about this since it was essentially revealed? Like, Mr. Robot was worried about it, Elliot was worried about it, and then nothing. Mm-hmm. But the explanation is, well, this has all been on Christmas and Elliot's had other things on his mind. It's not very satisfying for us who have lived through the last 5 weeks thinking and wondering and speculating about it. But I guess I'm inclined to give him a little bit more leeway than most, because it's you know, either buy into this crazy, like, long-ass Christmas day or you don't. But I mean, it goes without saying that that's one of the many questions that this show has to answer before they sign off. Like, what is the third personality and why is that important?
Yeah.
Just like White Rose's plan, I don't need it to be a DeLorean. I don't need it to be a TARDIS. I do need to understand what it is, what she thought was going to happen, and what actually happens.
Yeah.
Because right now, I'm not even sure what the stakes are. People are acting like it's going to be the end of the fucking world. If it's just a crazy delusional plan that no one has ever had the guts to say it's not going to work, she flips the switch and just like a puff of smoke comes out. Like that's a perfectly valid way you could end it. It's just not very satisfying.
And I think like you kind of hit it too when you said like, you know, what's the scale of this idea that White Rose has? Is it something that ends the world? Is it something that fundamentally changes the world? Or does it just change her place in it? Is it a personal like epic thing that happens, or it is a worldwide kind of epic thing?
Yeah,
we don't know,
because if it adds like two more zeros to her bank account, then who gives a fuck?
It's not, or if it brings back like her ex-lover,
right?
That's very, very important to her, but the world doesn't give a shit,
right? Probably wouldn't even know.
Yeah, it wouldn't matter. So like I don't know that it has to end the world to be significant, but it could be significant to White Rose.
The next feedback is representative of about five that I got of the same brand of feedback. This is the most concise one. Ryan M. said, "Hey, hello, friends. I was shocked by how distasteful I found last night's episode. It doesn't matter if it was Elliot or one of his personalities that used Olivia like that. You just can't come back as a character after doing something on that scale. You could argue that Elliot's sick plan was worse than Walter White letting Jane die in Breaking Bad. Sam Esmail, honestly, can fuck off." Yeah, no, I mean, I actually think it's
Sam
not...
Esmail can fuck off?
Well, I mean, I don't think he's saying that this is bad. He just didn't like it because he previously considered Elliot a hero, and now he sees him as a villain. And that's rough. I get it. I also think it's what's your standpoint? Who's worse, Walter White in letting Jane die, choke to death her own vomit, or...
No, I think, like, Elliot in this scene is worse.
Yeah.
He's actually...
Although Olivia didn't die...
Sure, but I don't.
But
that was only
it.
By the grace of of luck. Like that was not.
Yeah, and he directly caused it.
Yeah, that's the distinguishing factor.
Whereas Walter Wyatt, at best, inadvertently and indirectly caused it. So
right, and then just sort of let it happen instead of stopping it.
But I got no problem seeing eventually as Elliot as being the villain. Like I think that wouldn't surprise me at all. Or even if he see, because like, who gives a fuck how you see yourself? You know, like you see yourself as a hero and you kill a million people. Like, who gives a shit? You know, what does that even mean? So, yeah, I guess we should buckle ourselves up for the realization that maybe Elliot's is not going to be our knight in shining armor.
Yeah, I do take exception to like, fuck Sam Esmail. Sam Esmail is telling a story here. And if you... Is it fuck Sam Esmail because he took a character that I thought was fundamentally good and turned him into a bad guy, and so I'm personally feeling bamboozled? Is it like,
I think it's
fuck
a bummer.
Sam Esmail for telling a story with such a bad person in it? Like, because I've seen that sentiment online too, in perhaps not this particular instance, but like many people don't like a story simply because it's the story it is, because it's dealing with the subjects that it is. And I think that is crazy to me. I don't think any story should be off the table for being told. I think there are things you can say with stories that maybe are reprehensible, but portraying a story on screen does not make you bad. It's what you have to say with that story,
but it's
that
like,
could make you good or bad.
I can definitely feel, I can definitely empathize with someone that feels like they got bait and switch. Like, oh, I thought I was,
absolutely,
I was
yeah.
fooled into, because like, you know, Breaking Bad, that was its thesis. You're going to watch this man compromise himself until he becomes the villain. That was like never hidden yep. from you. It's kind of like complaining about going through the prequels of Star Wars and like, what the fuck? Anakin turned into Darth Vader. Ah, you yeah. know, no one says that because everyone knew it. That was the point of the story. We thought we were watching Elliot, like, you know, this kind of misguided, confused, but ultimately good, strong, moral person fighting the good fight against these ultra wealthy, powerful assholes. And it turns out he's an asshole, too. I could see being let down and like the emotional reaction of like, I just don't like that. It's a visceral reaction. It doesn't mm-hmm. doesn't mean it's a bad story. It doesn't mean it's poorly told. It's just like I'm having a negative reaction to it. And I've definitely felt that, too.
Sure.
Not yeah. necessarily with Mr. Robot, but I've definitely felt like it's like, OK, this is a fine story. I just don't like it. I don't
get mad at the creator of the story. I sort of. Yeah, when characters change, I go, oh, now I don't like this character. And I proceed, if I continue to watch the show, I proceed with not liking the character through the rest of the show. And I take it as, okay, that's the point.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, it might be like, this might be hyperbole, kind of like fuck George Martin after reading about the Red Wedding, you know? Like,
okay.
It's kind of like, you know, damn
sure,
you for
yeah,
making
like,
me care about someone who's an asshole kind of thing. Moving on to Seb W, those peppermint mochas were some of the worst examples of empty cup syndrome I've ever
yeah.
seen.
It was fucking
yeah,
bad.
It was pretty
they
bad.
They put in gulp sounds. It was It was bad.
Why? I read an art like, so I actually looked this up to see like why, because I'm like, it seems like the prop department, like I watched enough things like Lord of the Rings where like they're making these swords and they're you know, weighted properly so they're going to behave right on screen, but no one can like. And I read, it's like, well, you know, no one wants, like, a, you know, to spill coffee on an outfit and then they have to have a change of wardrobe or if it's going to cause this
or that.
How about
some water and a blow dryer?
Or how about just fill it full of, like, fucking putty or plaster? Give it a realistic weight, because the problem is it's just like there's no, and they're like, well, actors are supposed to act. That's fucking easy to say. Act like you're on the moon, asshole.
Uh-huh.
Act like you're on Mars. It's a lot harder, right?
Yeah.
Like, just give it some fucking
act
weight.
Like you're 50 feet tall with a huge blue dick.
Yeah. I mean, I just feel like the prop department needs to start filling these things full of some kind of, like, if they don't want shit to spill, then make it solid or whatever. Because, like, I watched, like, this YouTube clip of, like, 15 minutes of, like, people. Because if you're holding an empty cup, you gesture with it and just like start doing weird, you know, like it should be sloshing everywhere and it never does. It bothers me. Mm-hmm. I think we can do better. Come on. You can fucking make a Marvel can make Avengers Endgame and we can't realistically weight a cup so actors can act with an empty cup. Come on.
Hey, you're on 2020.
Yeah.
got your platform.
Seb continues. I think the only twist I saw coming in that episode was what Olivia was going to do in the bathroom and that he'd drug her. Actually, I didn't see the drug twist. I was like the whole like, what the fuck did Leon, what did fuck did, and then when he said, you already are, and they panned to the coffee, I'm like, ah, oh, fuck.
Yeah, I didn't catch it until they revealed it either.
So look at the big brain on Seb. The stuff between Dom and Darlene is incredibly tense. Dom is my favorite character in the show, and I'm glad she got out of that scene morally intact, but I'm worried for what will happen to their family next episode. Yeah, honestly, I think Dom's my favorite character, too.
Wow.
I really like her. I really like what Grace Gummer's doing to her. I think she's relatable. Like, it's one of the smartest portrayals of a character in this position I've ever seen. And I'm really, really rooting for her to make it out alive with her family and doggo intact.
Maybe favorite remaining character. I think my favorite character was Irving.
Oh.
Irving's fan fucking.
Well, you don't think Irving's going to come in and then.
I don't. It's looking more and more like no.
Mm.
But
hopefully. They'll have a circle of life food chain type situation where like Vera's a badass and then Janice pounces on him and devours him and then Leon pounces on her and devours him and then here comes Irv with his axe.
Yeah.
And then White Rose steps out of the shadows as the apex predator.
Mm-hmm.
I could get down with that. Joshua, I want to know what the Bald Move take on character deaths in television shows in terms of serving the character or the story. Seems like a meaty topic. Aaron, you've not been shy about Tyrell and how dumb you think his character was, but how do you feel how do you both feel about characters that did not get a traditional arc on a show? I feel when deaths happen suddenly that it reflects real life and how things must move on even as others fall along the way. Also, just like in real life, some people do not have redemptive arcs and just stay stagnant. Tyrell's always unhinged and was always willing to kill others to get what he wanted, and yet underneath that was a broken man that wanted acceptance and to belong to something. His quick temper and inability to slow down caused a ton of issues throughout the show and also led to his downfall by getting caught on a wire about taking down the Dark Army, forcing him to go on the run. Other characters, like Angela, or even in other shows that suddenly drop out of the show and do not seem to be playing a part in the game, how do you guys view this?
It's a big fucking question.
I don't think there's a right or wrong answer for any of these. It's like, one of the defenses, I'm talking a lot about Star Wars, maybe it's because I watched Mandalorian last night, but one of the defenses of Episode 2 and the truly awful dialogue between Christian Hayden and Natalie Portman mm-hmm. was, that's how teenagers in love talk.
Oh, not when I was a teenager in love.
And
back then we did better than that.
And yeah, like it's like there's stilted and wooden lines and people trying to feel out their way. But like, do we watch movies like that's a, so my question is like, did George Lucas do that as a stylistic choice, or is that just the best he could do? Mm-hmm. Because like, I think all these are just choices you make. Like Kevin Smith writes not realistic dialogue. He writes snappy dialogue mm-hmm. that is like the coolest rapid fire version of like your wittiest friends going at each other. Right. It's not realistic, but it feels cool. And it feels some other people, like Quentin Tarantino is the same way, but some people like write very like terse and believable dialogue. Some people put a lot of ums and ands in there and make it seem like natural. And then you got like what, Mamet? Is that the guy that wrote like Glenn Ross
sure.
or whatever? Like it's very heightened and like actorly and like a performance you can dig your teeth in.
Yeah.
I feel like character deaths are the same way. Like Game of Thrones had a lot of pointless deaths because that was very realistic. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to go to realistic. And you compare that to like J.R.R. Tolkien, who, you know, was very operatic in his fantasy. Which one's better? Like, I think they were both trying to do two different things, and they both did them very, very well, you know?
Yeah.
I've
seen deaths used as just ratings grabs and
yeah.
all kinds of things. Yeah.
Yeah. Like Glenn from The Walking Dead. I think that like Angela is an interesting case because when I saw that in the very beginning of the season, I actually thought her death would be a lot more meaningful. It's almost like an emotional MacGuffin.
Mm-hmm.
It's a weight that Elliot and Darlene are carrying around with them.
And Philip.
Instigator
for him to get involved.
Yeah. So like I don't know. And also we've got a lot of episodes left. It could be that she does come back in some form as a flashback or as a mm-hmm. personality fragment or who knows. So I don't know. I don't know. I hope this has been interesting.
Yeah, I just don't know how to answer this question because it's so huge. Like if there were a specific like if there were a more narrow focus on this question, maybe
yeah,
you got to
say because like, it's you can't draw a hard and fast line. You got to say like what is the story trying to do with this character, mm-hmm. and did the way what happened to the character enhance the story or take from it? Did it enhance the style of the show or take away? Did it enhance the mood or take away from the mood? And like I don't even think in Mr. Robot there's one answer. I think some of the deaths have been handled very well, and some of them are like yeah. Tyrell, like I. That character blew through me like, you know, a gentle breeze. It did not impact me whatsoever.
And yet it did have a profound effect on Elliot, it seems. Like Yeah. I mean, him coming to Darlene and apologizing.
Yeah, that's true.
Is something I don't think he does without that speech from Tyrell.
Do you think so? Because I feel like that's like mm-hmm. something he would have decided to do anyway. Because he said the whole time the reason I'm going because like Tyrone is the whole or Tyrone Tyrell the whole time saying this is dumb, this is stupid, we should stop, we should just die, we should lay down and die and rot. And Elliot finally in frustration say the reason I'm doing this dumbass is because of my sister, implying that he'd already kind of made that decision. But I don't know.
Hmm.
Tyrell's dead. The Howls have it. Let's move on. Mask Never Again. Just want to know what your thoughts are on Mr. Robot as the narrator this season. Why? Is this a signal about Elliot being dead, or maybe is there a time machine and Mr. Robot is now telling the story? And what's up with the weird lady at the coffee shop? Oh!
Fuck the lady at the coffee shop. Wasn't there some... didn't Elliot stop talking to us because we betrayed him? Because we didn't tell him about the Vera thing.
Was that it? I thought he was just isolating himself. That he was like, he was not opening himself up anymore as a way to protect himself or ensure the.
But I thought we were included in that. It was like, yeah, it was something that we did as viewers to offend him, which is crazy to say.
I don't. Maybe not. Because he's still talking to Mr. Robot, and Mr. Robot would be in that betrayal as well. I don't know.
Yeah, but now Mr. Robot is sort of speaking on his behalf.
Yeah. I mean, it's like we're talking about the deaths. It's a stylistic choice. Like, they're doing this intentionally, and it's something different that's intentionally. And, like, whenever Elliot addresses us again, it's going to be a big moment.
Yeah.
And then we'll be able to judge at that moment whether it was worth going away from the format for a season or not.
And Elliot's been so on mission this season that I think it's kind of appropriate that he doesn't take the time to talk to us.
Yeah.
Even if he were inclined to, because, you know, Mr. Robot's the one who's been saying, let's slow down, let's think this through, let's take, like, keep our limits intact. So, yeah, he would be the guy to, while Elliot's doing this mission stuff, talk to us.
What's up with the weird lady in the coffee shop? I mean, that's just a side effect of the weird framing. Like, but it's weird because I swear to God, when she got up and walked towards the camera and looked in the camera, I thought, like, okay, here's the third personality. It's the lady in the coat. She's been waiting in the wings of this coffee shop. Mm-hmm. But it's just, yeah, like Sam Esmail, as a stylistic choice, frames everything at the extreme edges of the focus of the camera. So then anything going on in the background is going to look weird.
Is this the same lady that people are saying looks like White Rose?
Does she look like White Rose?
A, no.
I thought she looked like a mid-40s Manhattanite.
It's just a person. Yeah, it's just a person walking through frame. It means nothing, in my opinion.
Yeah, but it's just framed like she's the center of focus just because...
Can you imagine? If I were going to try and spy on someone, here's what I would do. I find someone who looks as much like me as possible, and I would send them into a coffee shop in a trench coat.
The MacGruber plan.
To spy, yeah. Just so that if they did happen to spot the person, they'd go... Boy, that really looks like so-and-so. That really looks like Jim. I wonder if they're spying on me. Why would you send in someone who looks just like you to spy? That's the opposite of the purpose of spying, but
yeah,
okay.
It's like, there's no way they would send someone who looks just like them. It's
right, it's too obvious.
Yeah, it's hiding in plain sight.
reverse psychology. Krista came up with that one. Vera saw right through it.
That's right, that's right. He aluminum baseball bat right through that illusion. That's feedback we got for this week. robot@baldmove.com is how you send us more. And also forums.baldmove.com is how you can discuss Mr. Robot with your fellow fans. That's it for this week. We'll be back next week to see if we have, what, 7 Pipers Piping? 9 Lords
No,
of Leaping?
We're still on the 6 geese laying.
6, or we're holding out for the geese. We want our geese.
If you found the geese,
please send that in to robot.baldmove.com so we can count them. Because we were counting on them. We didn't get it.
Yeah, I want to know.
Until then, I'm Aaron.
I'm Jim.
See ya.